Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, the US adopts some groundbreaking climate policy for EVs, Ford's compact EV, and why Fisker just can't catch a break right now. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what the boss of Ferrari is saying about the need for EVs to be noisy. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Thursday, 21st of March. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. We go live at 5 p.m. UK, and Patreon supporters get the episodes ad-free. And first, be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Not often do we start with policy on the podcast, but this was a piece of groundbreaking legislation coming out of the United States and the Biden administration introducing climate regulation aimed at boosting new passenger EV sales for light trucks as well in the US to be electric or plug-in hybrid by 2032. There's a lot to get into with this, so I'll start off as per the New York Times today. The regulation took 3 years to finalize, setting ambitious tailpipe pollution limits to shift the US auto market towards zero emissions and electric vehicles. Despite EV sales being 1.2 million units last year, it's still less than 10% of new car sales in the US, as the US trails China and Europe significantly now. But this new rule wants to get the figure to 56%. The plan was adjusted more recently, and some would say watered down, as a nod to labour unions, their concerns over the transition and impact on jobs to EV. And don't forget, this is an election year after all. The New York Times going on to say that the updated regulations allow for the inclusion of plug-in hybrid vehicles as a compliance measure, acknowledging their growing popularity amongst US consumers because of the current limits in charging infrastructure and lots of reasons why. In a country where people do big miles, plug-in hybrids can make more sense. A reminder that, you know, obviously here in Europe, things are a little bit more compacted together. EVs make a lot of sense. And in China, EVs make a huge amount of sense. They have a very well-established and very well-run, for various reasons, high-speed public transport, particularly train networks. But public transport is a different beast in China. And so that's why long-distance EVs are not essential, places like here and China. And where the US, people start saying, well, I need at least 300 miles as the absolute minimum. You probably don't, but it's a mindset, and that's where plug-in hybrids tend to accommodate. As per the Washington Post, despite potential legal challenges from certain Republican states and fossil fuel interests, the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, now they represent Ford, GM, Stellantis and more, they've welcomed the EPA decision to postpone any strict mandates. Well, there's a reason they're doing this, because transportation, with the government are doing this, transportation in the US is the largest single source of carbon emissions, and it's a critical focus for climate change mitigation, with last year, 2023, easily the hottest on record for planet Earth. EVs will play a role in President Biden's climate strategy, which includes a goal to cut national emissions by half by 2030. The regulation reduces permissible tailpipe emissions, setting a path for over half of new cars sold in 2032 to be zero emission vehicles. And it's something that we've seen in policy around the world, something that Europe has done as well, or the EU rather, I should say. And that is not to specify the technology, but to reduce the emissions. So, hey, if you invent, hydrogen, for instance, or if you invent some sort of new magical fairy dust and you want that to be your technology, then fill your boots. They're not saying you have to be EV. They're reducing tailpipe emissions. If you can invent a more efficient form of propulsion, then you go for it. Well, implementation of the rule is expected to prevent 7 billion tons of carbon dioxide emissions, 7 billion tons of carbon dioxide emissions in one country in just 30 years, equating to the annual greenhouse gas output of the United States. The EPA projects nearly $100 billion in net societal benefits as well from the regulation, including $13 billion in public health improvements due to better air quality. Long-time viewers and listeners of this podcast know that a particular hot button of mine, and I'm not going to bore people with it now because I'll talk you to death on this, is the areas where the air quality is worse is where those people live who are least able to have a say in future policy. The air quality is not bad in nice big housing estates. They're all detached houses and very little traffic. If you are going to have health issues, you are more than likely, especially in the United States, to be a person of color, to be on a very low income, and to be living by those routes with extreme pollution. And it is It is ridiculously unfair to whole segments of the population. Those with the least voice in the conversation are those affected the worst. And I say that as a very privileged person, very aware of where I live, you know, by the beach, in a country that has, you know, lots of EV infrastructure, and I drive a couple of EVs, and I'm fortunate to do that, and I'm not under any illusion how lucky I am here. So this is a great piece of legislation. I hope everybody embraces it. The car makers seem happy because it's been watered down a little bit. No one's twisting their arm to go full EV. Plug-in hybrids are still allowed. There will still be detractors, and there will still be people who say this doesn't go far enough, but it's a very big piece of news today. Well, one of those companies that in the US, at least, and we're increasingly seeing the pace of EV change differ around the world, from China to Europe and to the US, which is pulling back and slowing things down. We'll be behind, if you want to use that word, but everyone has to do it at their own pace that's right for their, you know, economies and various situations, and car makers as well. And of course, I mentioned it's an election year as well. Biden has that crucial union support from the UAW and other unions, also the Steelworkers Union coming out as well. So with that endorsement also comes the need to bring those unions into the conversation in an election year, like I say. And so one of those companies that was vocal to say, we're not sure we can do this as quick as you want us to do, is Ford. And in order to adjust with supply and demand and what their customers want, they have said, look, we think we need to do some more hybrids, some plug-in hybrid stuff as well. But also, interesting, their CEO, Jim Farley, was talking about the need to make smaller vehicles as well. And that's where they can adjust their electric vehicle plan to focus on developing smaller, affordable EVs and delay their plans for much larger electric models. Now, this is not an announcement that Ford made overnight or yesterday or anything like that. It wasn't a press release they put out. Jim Farley has talked to this subject, I think, a few times more recently in recent weeks. I gather that this reporting kind of all stems from something that he said. It wasn't an earnings call, but it was an event or something he spoke at. I think this was several weeks ago now where this story started to spin up. So this isn't like a big announcement Ford just made, but he has been talking more recently, and it's a good reason to start talking about it, how they plan to introduce a compact SUV, all electric, by late 2026, aimed at competing with entry-level options from Tesla and others, and aiming for $25,000. And that's the big one, isn't it? The $25,000 price tag, because, as I've mentioned recently, the Teslas in inventory, as they are desperate, it's not a fire sale, but they're desperate to get rid of those cars by the end of the end of the quarter, in just a few days' time, are ridiculously good value. You get a brand new Model Y on your driveway for $35,000 after tax credit, which is cash on the hood these days, before local incentives. And so, all of a sudden, a couple of years ago, Ford making a $25,000 EV, I'd have gone, yeah, cool, that's nice for you, but we'll wait and see when it happens, because you've got to scale and you've got to bring those costs down. Well, actually, you get a Model Y for $35,000, and so Ford making a $25,000 vehicle, that's absolutely achievable. And achievable, a necessity, but maybe not profitably to begin with, but it's a necessity for that company to have something in that segment of the market. And there's the influx of Chinese cars here in Europe as well. The upcoming compact SUV built on a new electric platform, underpinning small electric vehicles like a smaller electric pickup truck as well, and possibly something for commercial or ride-hailing services. Ford have more recently been talking about a small team of less than 100 people that they based in California. Call it a skunk works, if you like, where they were allowed to go and race ahead at their own pace and put together a plan for Ford's EV future. That's, again, that's not a huge secret. I think the CEO spoken to that, I think, more than once in the past, using LFP, lithium iron phosphate cells, which are at least 30% cheaper than the alternatives. That project being led by Alan Clark, I believe, previously overseeing the engineering of the Tesla Model Y before he joined Ford. I'll pop a link to Car and Driver in the show notes for you to read more. Let's talk Fisker. Sometimes you just can't catch a break in life, generally. You know what I'm talking about. I think that's the case with Fisker. Sometimes it's just things go from bad to worse. Now, the YouTuber Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, who has like 20 million subscribers on his main channel, has an offshoot channel called Autofocus. Great name as well for a tech YouTuber to have. An automotive channel, by the way. And he made a video about Fisker saying it's the worst car, the Ocean, the worst car he's ever reviewed. I think it's had 3, 4, 5 million views now. I gather Fisker were pretty upset by that video. Well, now Consumer Reports bought a Fisker Ocean with their own hard-earned and had a look at it. It was a Fisker Ocean Ultra, and they highlighted a series of quality and functionality concerns, even though Fisker said it comes with the all-new singing, dancing version 2.0 software, which fixes everything they say. I don't think it does. Purchase price was $63,981. Wow, $64,000 for this. But several things were missing, like blind spot warning and lane keep assist and cruise control would come and go. The vehicle lacked that adaptive cruise, non-functioning or unactivated driver monitoring. Bluetooth was patchy. The brake system, they said, the indicator illuminated for an entire day and resolved itself unexplainedly. The suspension was criticized by Consumer Reports for being both floaty and jarring. That's quite impressive to get both those things together. And the destination charge of being $2,500, the highest Consumer Reports has ever paid for any vehicle they've bought to test. Other issues included the shifter, the throttle, the traction control, the interior rattling, cheap feeling upholstery, and uncomfortable door pull mechanisms. Now, if you own a Fisker, I'd love to hear from you, because it can't be that bad, surely. I love the look of this vehicle. It's made by Magna. They've got some serious production chops. They make the G-Wagon. Like, they've been making vehicles forever, and they're very, very good at what they do. So where's it falling down? Is it the software side that that Fisker are responsible for? Because this vehicle looks great, and in theory, it should be put together well. But it doesn't seem to be going well amongst talks of possible bankruptcy and investment from a mystery OEM. It's Nissan. Investment from somebody who might want the technology. At least companies are running the rule book or the rule over the books. It's going to be tough for Fisker to pull through this. But of course, we hope they do, because that vehicle looks great. If they can overcome this mountain of criticism, hopefully there's some bright days ahead for them. Talking of the YouTuber MKBHD, Marcus Brownlee, he, fresh from destroying Fisker, has his sights set on the Cybertruck these days, spotlighting a major issue with the Cybertruck that he had to review. It's a very comprehensive review, and I guess you don't get to be as big as him without offering balanced approaches to things. It's not often you see him just, you know, rip apart a phone or a tablet or whatever. He knows his position at the very top of the tech YouTuber tree. And so he's often considered in what he says. And it's very rare that he comes down against things too harshly. And I think the same was with the Cybertruck. He praised it and he gave insights into what it's like to own an early VIN Tesla. But he did highlight one of the issues around the driver's door, which was basically open even when it was closed. And he said, and I quote, "This panel gap is actually worth mentioning. It's the worst panel gap that I've ever seen on a production vehicle," underscoring the severity there of the build quality that he encountered. The gap so pronounced that he said he could stick his finger through it. And he also points out that he thinks that this would be an easy fix because it's blatantly wrong and it's a service center appointment that's needed. Now, I'll throw a picture up on screen for our YouTube viewers, and for our audio listeners, then, yeah, you know, when you close a door on the car and it only goes on that first click of the latch and you haven't slammed it all the way, you can kind of rattle it a little bit. Yeah, you could almost stick your finger through it. What's interesting, an interesting thing that I've seen lately, is the Tesla faithful, and there's a couple of them on screen right now, who are not used to criticizing the company, let's say that, because they make their business, their social following, their influence as being part of the Tesla cheering crowd, being very critical of Tesla lately. Not entirely, because they don't want to suffer the wrath of the company or Elon Musk, you know, shutting them out and that kind of thing. But these are on the X Media Network, social network, and they are more critical than I've seen in the past of these kinds of people that are coming around to saying, hang on a minute, you can't be sending Cybertrucks out the door to customers looking like this. User feedback, particularly from pro-Tesla users, echoing Marques Brownlee's concerns, describing the gap as embarrassing and the worst they've seen on any door. And, all these things, I'll have a look for any response from Tesla and bring you that on tomorrow's podcast if it comes. All of these things can be fixed, because it's inevitable with any a piece of consumer technology that things are going to go wrong. It's sending them out of the factory like it. And I think this is the break that Tesla were given 10 years ago. And, you know, panel gaps, whatever, it happens. If you care about it, you care about it. And many early Tesla owners who had either bad paint jobs or panel gaps or overspray, whatever, they're like, yeah, fine, but the car's also awesome, so jog on. And more increasingly, I think it's understandable when people say, yes, but you are now a mass market, 2 million vehicle a year, mainstream car maker. You're not this little plucky upstart. So Tesla still want to maintain the plucky upstart image and to have the excuses given of, you know, we're fighting the big boys. No, you are the biggest. You are worth more than most of the others combined. You cannot do this. You cannot send cars out of the factory like this. It might be a 5-minute service center fix. It might not be. It might need a whole new part. But either way, and they will fix it because they always do. But it is just unacceptable, isn't it, at this stage to have their halo vehicle, which it is for now. S and X are incredible, Plaid, obviously. But for now, all the attention's on this. I'm not sure a day goes by where I'm not on threads or Twitter where I see something negative about the Cybertruck. And that worries me because there's a general sentiment of criticism of Tesla, but I'm sure they'll get it fixed. All right, moving on. Let's talk buttons, should we? It's not just an EV thing, but generally in modern automotive design, it's more and more about the touchscreen, but that has really been driven by high-tech EVs, particularly in China as well, where customers want it. This Inside EVs report showing off a new feature from Xiaomi, though. Their new SU7, which is going to be for the Chinese market, allows optional buttons to be put back in beneath the touchscreen, almost like an add-on or a customizable bit that you can add to the lower portion of the touchscreen. Looks like it would clip in or something, like it's meant to be there. It's not going to look horribly just tacked on like a third-party piece. The central display is designed to be modular. It's magnetic and pin-locked attachments, and for easy customization, not just this one piece, but they said there's going to be more pieces like this. The docking unit has a set of piano keys, a volume knob, which attaches to the bottom of the screen. So if you do want that experience, you can just reach out, turn the dial for the volume. You can hit a button for air conditioning and things like that, catering to those who prefer tactile feedback and addressing any of those mixed preferences that are out there. And I can't help but think this is a brilliant solution because many in the Chinese market particularly want a very tech-forward experience. Touchscreens are fine, but it is something to do with driving that I think requires parts of your brain, unless you're a racing driver where you can, you know, get used to the sensation of speed and then be planning your shopping list for next week while you're doing 200 miles an hour. I think for the rest of us mere mortals, driving requires a level of concentration that at times touchscreens interfere with, which is why in this country we're not allowed to touch our mobile phone. So if you see any UK YouTubers holding their phone like this, being, you know, doing their stuff, that we're not allowed. We can use our telephone whilst we're driving, as long as you can initiate that call and hang up with voice. You can't reach out and touch your phone, and it has to be put away. And so that's an extension of the laws that we've had for a long time, which was not to use your phone and be holding it. So I know other countries have different, you know, rules and regs, and sometimes it's frowned upon, sometimes it is law. We can't touch a device, and that's for a good reason, because it takes away your concentration. So all of that is my justification to say I like buttons. I like steering wheels with buttons, not the silly gloss piano black thing where you got to feel your way, because then you've got to look down, like on the VW steering wheel. You've got to look, what am I doing here? You just want something that you can, like a proper old Golf steering wheel, the VW know how to make, where you can feel your way around. Yeah. My opinion, I might be wrong. I normally am. Now, let me address one of the things that came up in the comments recently. I made a video, a podcast a couple of days ago, talking about how we always need to have that conversation to help new people coming into electric vehicles or just anyone learning about EVs. If you do know a little bit more than the average person, always help them differentiate. They're talking about Tesla superchargers and the Tesla plug and what they might have heard called NACS or J3400, its official name, is that those are separate things. They're different things. The ability for Ford, now Rivian, and soon GM and Polestar and Volvo, they're going to be the next ones to plug into a supercharger on Tesla's network, V3 superchargers, is separate to the plug issue. And I utterly understand why they get conflated, because they are effectively the same in many people's heads. But they're absolutely not. The ability to use Tesla's network using that plug, using an adapter, is part of the wider conversation of using that plug as a standard in the United States. The North American charging standard, which became J3400, when it got standardized by the standards body, means that charge makers can put the cable on their chargers, and that's got nothing to do with superchargers. So I see this confused in the comment section. I'm trying to help people navigate this and explain it. If you think I'm going overboard, thinking this is an issue, maybe I am. But take this example. The ChargePoint is now accepting orders for retrofit kits for the J3400 plug. So if you are somebody who has ChargePoint technology and you want a retrofit kit for the Express 250 model for ChargePoint hardware, and you think, right, well, I had a charger, perhaps that had a CCS1 and a CHAdeMO on, and I'm not seeing anyone using the CHAdeMO, then I might as well replace that with a J3400 plug and give more access to those cars that are increasingly going to have either the adapter or natively come with J3400. Two distinct retrofit cables for level 2 chargers and level 3 chargers, depending on what charge point hardware that you have got. And if you have maybe some charge point hardware in your garage, you probably wouldn't want to convert over to it yet, unless you have reason to. But as more and more cars both come with the adapters and then soon natively, that far, far better connector than the one was CCS1, then you're going to see more of this. And you're going to see more chargers, Electrify America, new charging networks, whatever, they'll be putting J3400 on. And that has got zero these days to do with Tesla, now that they've given that connector over to the standards body and it's running away and doing its own thing as an independent standard. So two different things. And again, hopefully we can help explain to people that that is not the supercharger network, but it is kind of connected. I will get there. Let's talk about this nice bit of news coming out of Tesla next, though, and that is that they have successfully increased their 4680 battery cell production at Gigafactory Texas, and it is now the equivalent of making 1,000 Cybertrucks a week. Now, you can do the math if you want to and say, well, it's got 123 kilowatt-hour battery, and work that and extrapolate that. But Andrew Baglino, the Senior VP of Energy Engineering, on the last earnings call, maybe the earnings call before it, I remember him saying that at least Cybertruck production wouldn't be constrained at this time with their own 4680 cell production, even though they didn't disclose the exact number of Cybertrucks being made or the exact megawatt hours of cells being made per week. To make 1,000 trucks, I think trucks worth of cells is significant and a great bit of news from a company with a rich heritage in making their own cells. The ramp up of 4680 has not been problem free. We saw some pretty sketchy charging on the Model Ys, and that's now discontinued. You can't get a Model Y with 4680s. They're all going into Cybertrucks. We've not seen the best charging yet from Cybertrucks, but some of that will be dialed in with software and BMS optimization, and some of it with better hardware as they learn to make those things better. A great bit of news. Now let's talk one of those car makers that I'm sure doesn't relish going EV, and that would be Ferrari, because look, they have their thing going on with the drama and the noise and the combustion stuff, and you know what? Let's let them carry on doing that. Ferrari, Lamborghini, McLaren don't want to put too much electrification in. Is there a real problem with that? There should be exceptions for smaller car makers. The problem Ferrari have got is they aren't really a small car maker anymore. They can't really get an exemption by saying, well, we only make 1,000 of these vehicles a year, because those exemptions should be there for small projects and small car makers. I think everywhere they're just, let's not make everyone go EV. However, Ferrari are a big fish these days, and the CEO Benedetto Vigna asserting his EVs from Ferrari will not be like a quiet Tesla, but instead during a CNBC interview saying that the understanding of electric car technology opens the possibility to create unique sounds, indicating Ferrari's EVs will not be silent. The commitment is to craft an EV that delivers on Ferrari's renowned driving experience. Look, there's no doubt that going EV can make even a hypercar so much better. See Rimac Nevera as the ultimate smackdown to anything combustion. But in Ferrari world, I get it. You're buying the car for the whole experience, and that's difficult to go EV. If they're talking fake sounds, shudder. They really shouldn't, but we'll wait and see. There's been more talk. There's obviously there's the what is it that's coming soon? The Fratsonic speaker system that promises interesting sounds. I think they might be novelties that you turn off after 5 minutes. Writing this story reminded me of a funny story that happened this morning before I took my 5-year-old to school. We were building Lego cars. And even though he's 5 and has only ever been in EVs, because, you know, we take him around in our EVs, my mum and stepdad, they have an MG5. So when they take him off for a day, he's driving in an EV. But he, you know, it's funny. If we have the window down and he can smell diesel, he'll say, "Daddy, what's that smell?" I'll be like, "Hey, it's a dirty diesel." I'm brainwashing him already. And he'll go, "Whoa, dirty diesel, Daddy, hates the smell." Even then, with our Lego toys this morning, we were going vroom, vroom, making car sounds. Like, where did that come from? I heard myself talking, vroom, vroom, changing gears. I'm like, come on, like, I'm Mr. EV person and I'm making the car sound. So maybe Ferrari do need to, for people that can't get over it. A quick mention for batteries and Samsung SDI planning on an independent EV battery plant somewhere in North America, they say. They're going to establish their own EV manufacturing facility or cell manufacturing facility in North America to boost their production capabilities. Choi Yun-ho, representing Samsung SDI, talking on stage about this intent to secure their own independent factory to support the move to EV. Details like location, timeline, and financial commitment were not disclosed. Of course, they have established deals with any of those big car makers. I mentioned for Citroën next, and the Citroën eBolingo has a new bigger battery. And here in the UK, it will start at £37,990. So what do you get for your £38,000? Well, a bigger LFP battery pack, 50 kilowatt hours, which still sounds quite small to many people, I'm sure, but it's a higher usable capacity than the outgoing model, WLTP, 345 kilometres or 214 miles, and a heat pump. Now, standard, despite the LFP battery sensitivity to low temperatures, they say that the eBolingo will optimize its range and efficiency with custom route planning from the app for those that use this as a working vehicle. So planning their daily route and then sending it to the car and then jumping in. Two body lengths, either the medium or the XL. The XL is up to 4.75 meters or 15.6 feet. And the XL variant, when fully optimized for space and all the seats folded down, etc., 4,000 litres with the rear seats removed and the boot loaded to roof height. And that, again, will be great for as a working vehicle. There's a passenger version of this as well called, what, the E-Space Tour, is it? And great for, you know, long lengths or for being a working vehicle, like I say, or if you need a 7-seater, the passenger version of this. Now, staying with the French bedfellow of Citroën, Peugeot, revealing the E5008. Now, if you need a 7-seater, you need a 7-seater. If you need it for work or family, because you have enough offspring that you need to move 7 people around at once, if you know, you know. And there's very few choices in EV world, but that choice gets a bit bigger as of today with the E5008. And it's really affordable as well. The design mirrors the E3008 in terms of the 21-inch big wraparound sort of infotainment display with the iCockpit, I think they call it. In this 207 horsepower single motor 73 kilowatt hour battery, so on a WLTP range cycle, that would be 312 miles or 502 kilometers. So again, good efficiency here from a reasonably big battery, 73 kilowatt hours, 312 miles, 502 kilometers. Good efficiency from this. A long range version uses the same motor, but a 98 kilowatt hour battery, if you need a full 400 miles or 660 kilometers, that is easily the best in its class. There is also a dual motor version coming as well. Peugeot indicating that the E5008 will start below £50,000, easily making it the most affordable 7-seater. So you can look at the EQB, you can look at the Kia EV9, you can look at Model X. Is that 6 or 7-seat options? I need to check the UK configurator, but either way, over here, if you need the space, this is going to be an incredible option, and I can't wait to tell you more details about it as people start to drive it, and I can bring you some more information. Before we go today, we'll talk about San Francisco aiming for widespread curbside EV charging. Officials plan to significantly increase EV infrastructure for thousands of curbside EV charging stations. A pilot program for the curbside initiative is expected to launch, if not late this year, then next. next year, and the move is part of the broader goal in San Francisco to go to net zero emissions. Representatives talking about how a feasibility study for the curbside charging project is about to get underway, with an ambitious target to install 5,000 curbside charging stations by the year 2030. I can't say how much of a good idea this is, how happy I am to hear this, because all of the attention gets paid to DC fast charging, and rightly so. It's where the sexy stuff happens, and we charge our cars in 20 minutes, and it's ridiculous. The technology is incredible, and the DC fast charging stuff is important, because if you're heading somewhere, you need to get there, and we need those chargers in the ground. No one has that conversation about, hey, why don't you slow charge your car overnight on curbside for 12 hours when you're sleeping, because that's not sexy, but it's really important conversation to have. Well done, San Francisco. And that's your podcast for today. Keeping an eye on the time, I want to be respectful of your time. I could go on. I had notes made today to talk about a four-wheel drive Isuzu truck coming to the UK, about Stellantis investing in a vertical takeoff and landing. We were also going to talk on the show today about a charging company in Portugal making very fast charging technology and more. But maybe I'll save these stories for a weekend bonus edition for the Patreon subscribers, or if it's a quiet day today, they'll end up in tomorrow's podcast, no doubt. None of them particularly time-sensitive, but hey, I want to be respectful of your time, and I appreciate you watching. And if you get any service from this podcast, going through hundreds or thousands of stories a day sometime and whittling it down to the really important stuff you need to know, I'd appreciate you hitting the subscribe button, maybe leaving, you know, a comment or a thumbs up, joining the conversation. It really helps the YouTube algorithm let people know that you were interested, and maybe they might be as well, in watching and listening to this. The audio version on your podcast platforms is free and always will be to listen to, but Patreon supporters get those episodes first and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. And always a daily mention for our premium partners: Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie, and you must subscribe to the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Hey, have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, but there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.